Hi, everybody. This is Leonard Maltin, and you're listening to Maltin on Movies. The humorist Henry Morgan, who used to have a radio show, said that he objected to that kind of an opening. He used to say, "Hello, anybody." Wait, I'm more optimistic than that. I know you're out there. I know you're listening.
When I think of you, the very first thing I think is optimist.
Thank you.
Optimist Thank you. Prime. Eh?
The other voice you're hearing is that of my daughter, Jessie Maltin. Jessie Maltin Hadfield.
Thank you. If Social Security says that's my new name, then it's my new name.
Well, then who am I to argue?
There you go.
Well, hi there, kiddo.
Hi, Daddy.
We are here to talk about a variety of things, partly because you have solicited questions from our listeners.
I have indeed.
That proves that we have listeners.
Yeah, well, you got enough to make some questions up.
That's good. And then later in the show, I'm going to recommend some films. You know, we like to do sleepers. I always like to encourage the underdog type movie and encourage you to go see and support them. But usually we do it in retrospect. Like, here's some you can get on video. Here's some you can find, you know, on cable or whatever. But there are an awful lot of good ones still playing in theaters right now that you can see now.
And why miss them?
Exactly. So we'll get to that in a little while.
Won't we just?
We will.
Now, it's only fitting that I would follow Sam Levine, who is my adopted brother, from last week. It was so sweet because everybody can hear just how much these two adore each other. And I've just had to kind of come to terms with it. The reason that I now have a Hadfield is we did an episode. I got married recently. And so I'm learning to respond to names other than Maltin, and it's very strange. It's a strange world. I feel like one of those actresses who suddenly has to add a hyphen.
But you didn't add a hyphen.
I didn't add a hyphen.
You chose not to.
You're
hyphen free.
I did. But, you know, Maltin for life, I think. We should get matching tattoos, Daddy. Maltin and the number 4 and then life spelled L-Y-F-E. Maltin for life.
Is that a 4 number 4?
Oh, yeah. So I said, yeah.
Okay.
Maltin number 4 and then L-Y-F-E.
Okay. How about we don't do
that? I think you're a Debbie Downer. That's what I think.
Well. Let's get on to some of the queries that have come in from our vast listenership.
Indeed, let's. These come from Twitter and also Facebook. If I completely screw up your name, please forgive me. Let's begin here. John Webb would like to know what your thoughts are on the film Lost in Translation.
My thoughts are very positive on that film. I like it a lot. And in fact, I was very lucky with that movie because I saw it at a fairly early screening and sort of discovered it for myself before it had been talked over and hashed over to death. I really, really liked it. I thought Bill Murray was terrific. I don't like everything Sofia Coppola has done, the writer-director of that film, but she certainly does interesting movies and sometimes ambitious movies. But this one hit the bullseye for me, and I liked everything about it. Well, right afterwards, I started seeing advertisements for it because it was coming out in theaters. And as so often happens with movies like this, they said, "Hilarious! Bill Murray's never been funnier. Go see it." It's like, no. You're misleading people. You're promising something you can't deliver. And people are going to go expecting a Bill Murray comedy and going to be really, really pissed off.
We've talked about this a bit. First of all, being spoiled with either screenings or going to film festivals means that we get to see quite a few things before we've heard anything about them. So it's not yet got that everybody loves it, so you have to love it thing.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we often find ourselves watching these trailers and going, you're setting yourself up for failure. Because when you tell people this is going to be really funny and it's not funny, or this
and
is
not intended to be funny.
And not intended to be funny. You know, it's one thing for a film to just have funny moments, and that's okay, but it feels like a lot of times studios are almost, they're scared sometimes of their product. And so they want to make it into something that maybe they feel is easier to sell. But we've, you know, had it every time. You go, well, that's not a good idea though, guys.
I was just thinking about how I think that's one of the movies. There's usually one or two a year where people will stop me, you know, in a hotel lobby or on the street or at an airport, and they'll say to me, I can see the look in their eye. They'll say to me, "What did you think of Lost in Translation?" Daring me to say I liked it because they were the ones who were pissed off.
Yep.
Misled, pissed off, and now, you know, want to find out from somebody why they didn't like this film they were supposed to like so much. And so I had to do a kind of a tap dance with them and say, well, I liked it a lot, but then I saw it before anybody hyped me about it.
You have to preface it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You have to say, I completely understand why you'd feel the way you do, because I would be really annoyed too if somebody had me walk in thinking I was going to laugh and then instead I'm crying. Or you think, oh, this is a fun date night movie.
Right. And not that it doesn't have a lot of funny stuff in it, but it's not what I would call a convention. I wouldn't call it a comedy at all. Mm. And I wouldn't call it a conventional comedy if I were stretching the definition.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that it won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. Nothing could have been more original than that film. And so that's what I think of Lost in Translation.
Fair enough. Gary Simon says...
A nice, easily pronounceable name.
I know, right? Thank you, Gary. Have you had a chance to review your review of Empire of the Sun? 2 stars? I disagree. Bale? Malkovich? Come on.
Well, I'll admit I haven't seen it since it was new. It is a film with impeccable credentials, Steven Spielberg being at the top of that list, and Christian Bale being a very talented, precociously talented young boy. And it's one I haven't seen, so maybe I should revisit it, and I will try to do so.
People often ask what movies you watch repeatedly, and the truth is you don't get to watch very many movies more than once.
No, because I'm too busy catching up with the new ones.
That's the thing. I mean, there are times when he's got an afternoon screening and an evening screening. And if those go well, it's a good day in the Maltin household. And if both those movies do not, then there's a lot of crying. Let's see.
Not crying. I think the word, I'm looking for the exact word, whimpering.
Whimpering. There you go. Paul, who has no last name, why didn't Win-Win receive more attention?
I agree with the question and the tone of the question. We've discussed Win-Win. Baron Vaughn and I discussed Win-Win on this show.
What a good movie.
Written and directed by Tom McCarthy, who just won Best Picture for Spotlight last year. Tom McCarthy has an incredible track record. His first movie as writer and director was The Station Agent, which introduced us memorably to Peter Dinklage.
You know, that guy who's in everything all the time.
And to Bobby Cannavale. Who's also in everything.
Who's also in everything.
And the only established person in it was Patricia Clarkson, who was then and remains one of the great American actresses. And Tom had worked with all three of them in the theater in New York. And he wrote these parts for them. And that's why The Station Agent was such a good movie. Then he made another wonderful film called The Visitor, which gave tremendous recognition to another terrific actor, Richard Jenkins. And
Jenkins, who's never bad.
No.
He like Patricia Clarkson, he's just a phenomenal actor.
Yep. And then Win-Win, to me, was every bit as good as those movies.
Yep.
And it had Paul Giamatti and Amy Ryan and a lot of good actors in it. It just didn't catch on.
No, it was, a slightly different tone, but another... All of his movies...
Also with Bobby Cannavale.
Exactly. Yeah. All of these movies, again, they're funny... But they're not comedies.
No, that film is so true to life in so many ways. And, of course, it has humor all through it. But I just can't say enough. I really like that film. And if you didn't hear us recommend it the last time, I'm recommending it now.
Mm-hmm.
Win-Win.
Win.
With Paul Giamatti and a wonderful cast.
Johnny, I don't know if it's Pomato or Pomato. Potato. Tell us some of your favorite, oft-forgotten, live-action Disney movies from your youth.
Well...
Tell us about your youth with Disney.
Let's not. There's so many. Well, there's some that I liked as a kid that maybe don't hold up quite as well as I would like them to. But I did revisit The Great Locomotive Chase recently with Fess Parker and Jeffrey Hunter. And that's a film that's based on the same true Civil War story that inspired Buster Keaton to make The General back in the silent film era in the 1920s. It's about Andrews Raiders and about the theft of a railroad train by Northern agents who have infiltrated the South. It's so good, and it builds. Now, the thing that film does that very few movies do nowadays is that it takes its time building the story bit by bit by bit. So you have to have some patience at the beginning as they lay down the exposition. But then as it gets going, and you remember, too, that this was made before the era of CGI, so that everything you see that's going on with these railroad trains, these period railroad trains, chasing each other, rounding bends, coming in and out of tunnels, it's all happening right on camera. it's an awfully good movie that doesn't get much recognition. And unlike, you know, people who sometimes put down Disney, we don't like those people.
We do not like those people at all.
But who say, oh, it's all pablum. They just do happy endings and the same thing. Well, I don't want to give too much away. You may know the real story behind Andrew's Raiders, but this is a film that dares to not have a simple tied up with a bow happy ending. Not at all. It's one that I like very, very much. There are some that I came to a little bit later, like the 50s live-action version of The Story of Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And His Merry Men. That's a wonderful little movie. It's a very different take on Robin Hood than the Errol Flynn classic or any of the dozens of other Robin Hoods.
The 7 million Robin Hood that exist, yes.
But it's a charming and very entertaining film.
Yeah. It's. I think it's interesting that Disney has gone back to doing more of the nature films that Walt mm-hmm. used to enjoy so much.
Mm-hmm.
He loved presenting those. And now mm-hmm. we have more of these with apes, with all kinds of creatures.
Yes, exactly.
Mammals
and some of those original ones, I just watched Secrets of Life again because I was going to introduce it on Turner Classic Movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's every bit as good as it ever was.
Yep.
Just a remarkable macroscopic photography, time-lapse photography, great music scores on all of those films. That True Life Adventure series won a passel of Oscars and deserved every one of them.
How many Oscars?
A passel.
Well, then.
Which is not the same as a pestle.
I was about to say the vessel with the pestle.
Yeah, I knew that. I anticipated that.
We know each
that.
Other too well. We need new material. Christopher, and again, I don't know if it's Pistole or Pistoli, says, do you collect hard copies of movies? Are you a fan of streaming? And this is an interesting
one. Well, the answer is yes to both. I'm a latecomer to streaming, I will admit. And you know when I really started streaming? When I started doing this podcast. Because we had recently moved to a new house after 25 years, and I couldn't find my DVDs and Blu-rays so easily. And I do have quite a large collection. I'm trying not to increase it in number, but I get sent review copies of things. And when somebody sends you something and you say, oh, can I bear to get rid of it now?
Nope. Let me answer that for you. Nope.
Generally, nope. Especially if it has good extras, good bonus features.
By the way, he's also passed this on to me, and I wish that I could say I'm better than it. Nope. No, I love having, much like in our household, we like having books. Nothing against Kindles or any of those things, but there's just nothing quite like actually having a book in your hands. It's sort of how I feel with movies. I like having movies. I have things on my computer, but there's something about having it.
So I've come to appreciate the convenience of streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that very, very much.
Yep.
But what they haven't yet figured out, at least to my knowledge, is how to stream commentary tracks and whether it's worth their time to stream all the bonus material that comes on a lot of films. And of course, the other problem is that I like a lot of old and obscure and odd movies, which are not available for streaming.
No.
And so I'm reluctant to give away or give up.
Only in the deepest, darkest basements many of these things exist.
I don't want to give up my DVDs because I don't know that Buck Jones Western from 1932 is going to be easily streamable,
I would like
if
to say,
at all.
We also still have our laser discs. We don't have as big of a collection.
No, we got rid of most of them.
But we do have, I mean, I have
not got rid of, by the way, just to be, nothing ever goes in the garbage can.
Oh, no.
Nothing.
No.
Those went to the USC Cinema Library.
Yep.
So they have a home.
I believe, though, that I got my Weird Al Yankovic, all of his music videos,
right,
and Coneheads. And I think I've got the Michael Jackson anthology
greatest hits,
in there. Yeah, yeah. The important things. The important things have stayed close.
Is it true that you collect still Laserdiscs because you are from Mars?
We are from France. I am from France. No, the little Coneheads humor for you.
Just a little.
Now, something that we got asked a lot, as we always do, is about the Disney treasures.
Ah.
And every time.
We should explain what they are, for those who don't know.
We always answer the same thing. No, there are not more coming. We would love for there to be. We would love for them to come out on Blu-ray or do anything at all. And we're so glad that you love them. But they ain't going nowhere, unfortunately.
If you don't know what we're talking about, this is a series of limited edition, tin boxed DVD sets, generally two DVDs per set, that I co-produced and initiated and hosted for about 9 years. I think we had 36 or 37 entries altogether.
You can watch his glasses change over time. It's terribly exciting.
It was a golden opportunity. I presented the idea to Dick Cook, who was then the chairman of the Walt Disney Company.
Wonderful man.
A wonderful guy. And he said, let's do it. It was like the shortest meeting in Hollywood history. Let's do it. And so we did. What we did was release every Mickey Mouse cartoon, every Donald Duck cartoon, every Pluto cartoon, every Goofy cartoon, every Silly Symphony cartoon, and then selections from the Mickey Mouse Club.
Zorro.
The complete Zorro.
The complete.
All of Zorro.
The complete Zorro.
All of Zorro, that wonderful series, and with the four special one-hour-long versions they did the last year of its existence.
Is my very favorite El Fago Baca? Is he in there?
He is. We have the Texas John Slaughter and the Nine Lives of El Fago Baca, which we just did highlights from. And people said, why didn't you do them all? Well, they wouldn't let me do them all, but we did some. We did the Hardy Boys cereal. We did the Annette cereal from the Mickey Mouse Club. We did a lot of fun stuff.
There's a whole Spin and Marty.
it was just a dream opportunity, a dream opportunity. And because these were done starting, I think, in the year 2000 or 2001,
something like that,
which is now 15 years ago, we got to interview a number of Disney veterans, some of whom are no longer with us, sorry to say. But we got them on camera, which was just great. And they're there for all time. Now, the downside is that they did do limited editions. And a lot of them were so popular, they went out of print almost immediately. Some are still in print. Some are available. You can find them online. But you can also find some of them at wild speculator prices, which doesn't seem fair that they should be so hard to get. And they're not available for streaming either. So I hope someday somebody will decide to do that. Are you listening, folks at Disney?
Right.
Because there are a lot of people who want them.
We get asked all the time.
And it would be wonderful to see them come alive again. And that's all we can say about that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll answer more questions, but I'll also give you a hint of some of those sleepers I was talking about. So don't go away. Jesse and I will be right back.
Hey everyone, Scott Aukerman here, and I want to tell you that the Comedy Bang Bang show is going on tour. We're on tour right now. Me, Paul F. Tompkins, Lauren Lapkus, Neil Campbell for half of it, and Mike Hanford for the other half. And you can get in on the madness even without a ticket by following Earwolf on Snapchat. We'll be taking snaps during shows on the road and behind the scenes. And remember, you can hear every single live show the next day on Howl. Use the code CBBLIVE at howl.fm when you sign up, and you'll get 1 month for free. Thanks, and I'll see you soon in a city near you.
Hello again, and welcome back to Maltin on Movies, with not one, but two Maltins. I am not Leonard, I'm Jesse, and that over there, you can't see him but I can, is my dad.
Imagine, if you will, one sitting opposite the other. Imagine, if you won't, one sitting opposite the other, but that's what we're doing.
That is what we're doing.
And we're talking to you, and very happy to be talking to you, and very happy to have a little two-way communication today.
Damn Skippy.
Because I teased this, let me recommend a couple of movies. And then we'll go back to the questions. Now, again, it's rare that I review current movies. I don't think that's a great service on a show like this because I review films on my website, leonardmaltin.com, and you can easily look those up. And there's so many podcasts that review new movies, I felt when we were initiating this show that we should do something different, and that's what we've been doing all along. But I can't resist right now because there really are a handful of films that, you know, maybe they aren't playing in the multiplexes. Some of them are. Maybe they aren't the first choice because you haven't seen or heard enough about them to be familiar with them. And there are some people who actually are suspicious of movies that they haven't seen promoted on billboards and bus ads or seen the star on the cover of a magazine or, you know, or on the late night talk shows or the morning talk shows. Believe me, these are really good movies. And the first one I'll mention does have stars in it. It's called The Meddler. And it stars Susan Sarandon, my guest of recent weeks, and Rose Byrne and J.K. Simmons. And it's a really good movie, written and directed by Laureen Scafaria. And it's about, in sum, a woman of a certain age who's been widowed for 1 year and decides impulsively to move from New Jersey to Los Angeles to be near her daughter, her grown daughter, Rose Byrne. But she won't leave the daughter alone. She can't. She's incapable of leaving her alone. She's a very outgoing person. She wants to help. Everybody she meets, she wants to help. Well, when I started watching this movie, I said, is this going to be a one-joke movie? It's not. It isn't. It's based on the writer-director's life. It's based on her real-life mother. It's not a cheap joke type of movie. It's about people and relationships and people's needs and people's desires. And what do you do when you've been robbed of your lifelong mate, but you still have a lot of life inside you? And I really like this film very, very much. And you heard me saying that to its star, Susan Sarandon, a few weeks ago. And I wasn't just blowing smoke. I meant it. So this is still playing in theaters right now. So you can and should go to see it, I think. I think you'll really like it. It's called The Meddler. A second one that's pretty recent and is still playing in theaters is called A Bigger Splash. And it's an Italian movie in English, which is to say it's an Italian director and screenwriter. It's based on a much older French movie. And it takes place on a volcanic island off the coast of Italy. And volcanic is one of the words that describes the movie. It's about the interrelationship of four people. Tilda Swinton plays a rock star, a glam rock star, who's had serious throat surgery and is recovering from it. So she and her lover, played by Matthias Schoenaerts, the brilliant Belgian actor who's been making a big reputation for himself, they go to this island just to get away, to have peace and quiet and a retreat where she won't feel so bad about not talking. She's trying not to use her voice. But peace and quiet comes to an end when an old friend of theirs, played by Ralph Fiennes, shows up with a young woman who turns out to be his grown daughter that he only has come to meet recently. He didn't know that she was his daughter. She's played by Dakota Johnson. Ralph Fiennes gives the most extraordinary performance in this film as a guy who is just bombastic, full of life, overfull. There's no such word. Overflowing with life and with no filter. He just comes on strong and stays that way. And it turns out that he has a past relationship with Tilda Swinton. And, I mean, she's over that, but he's not necessarily over it. And then there's his daughter, who's kind of a nymphette, who adds to the brew. And it's what happens with these four characters.
I like you describing soap opera type situations.
Well, you know, it's like, I love foreign films. I love foreign language films. I love European films. And this, as I say, is as European a film as you're going to get in English. The only thing that distinguishes it is that it's in English and really shouldn't be. Somehow you feel like you almost ought to be reading subtitles. But the four actors are awfully good, and Ralph Fiennes is extraordinary in it. Just extraordinary. That's called A Bigger Splash. And those are my first two recommendations du jour. They're in theaters now. Go see them. You know, if you don't support these films, folks, they have a harder time making them. It really requires building an audience and a constituency. And so when people say to me, I don't know, I was trying to find something to see last weekend, there was nothing playing, you didn't look hard enough. Now, sometimes there is nothing playing. But right now, there are a number of good choices. And we'll get back to that in a little while. But shall we return to our Q's and A's?
Indeed, we shall. Jonathan Blankford says, are there any films that you hated the first time you saw it but liked the second time, or vice versa? I find with you that there are a lot of times when, because you don't get to see movies more than once, every now and then what happens, you've heard us talk about my dad's class. My dad's taught at USC for 17, probably almost 18 years now. And what happens sometimes is he'll see the film beforehand, and then because it's showing in his class, he'll watch it again. And it's really interesting because it is a rare occurrence to get to see something twice, but it does allow you to look at it in a different light, plus having a different audience, going from seeing it at a screening, probably primarily with critics, and then going to his class of students who range in age from, you know, 18, 19 to almost, I mean, into the 30s, really. And so you get different takes on it. And what I find, I love watching my dad in a theater because I like watching his reactions, is that you do get to see some of the things that you may not have noticed. Now, with some films, they're just terrible, and that's the way it is. But with others, especially ones that you like, a lot of times I found that you go from just liking them to loving them.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's a big Alexander Payne fan. So he saw Nebraska at a screening and then showed Nebraska in class. And I remember you saying, because you knew what the pace was going to be like, you were so much, I think you were readier for it.
I liked it the first time, and I liked it a lot the second time.
Yeah.
It really got to me the second time. And I appreciated all of its values the first time, but that second screening really made it for me.
Yeah.
I liked Trumbo pretty well the first time, but when I saw it again in my class, and we were lucky enough to have Jay Roach, the director, and Bryan Cranston, the lead actor, and the screenwriter whose name I've just blanked on, how terrible. And they were all there, which was really neat, after the screening for a Q&A. But watching it that second time, I know I liked it more. I still think it has flaws, but it's a good, good movie. And of course, the one thing that didn't change was my appreciation for Bryan Cranston's performance as the screenwriter Dalton Trumbo.
He's incredible.
Just great.
He is an incredible
actor.
Just
great.
So I think your answer sort of is that you tend to enjoy films more. But then sometimes, I guess, with the ones a movie that you've talked about quite a bit before is Alien.
Well, yes, that's my go-to example because it's the most extreme example I think I can remember. When it came out, I saw it. I was traveling on a book tour and I was by myself. And usually my wife comes with me to films that are going to be scary, and then I make her arm black and blue during the course of the movie.
He's a jumper.
But I didn't have that, so I ate my jacket instead while watching Alien. I'm just a wimp about films like that.
You're an adorable wimp.
So I didn't. Oh, thank you. You're very sweet. But I didn't really enjoy the experience. I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
I could admire, you know, things about the movie, but I didn't enjoy it. Then 25 years later, Ridley Scott re-edited the film just slightly, made some changes, and reissued it theatrically, something that rarely happens nowadays.
Yeah.
But they brought it back to theaters. I saw it again on a theater screen. And, of course, things had changed in those 25 years. The film had been copied, ripped off, gone into the sort of the common vernacular, you might say, of movie making. And my threshold had risen as well in terms of what I could accept.
You had to learn to handle a lot more.
That's right. And I said, this is a masterpiece. This is just a phenomenally good piece of work.
Yep.
And so much better than all the ripoffs
and
wannabes that I'd seen in between. So I changed my mind completely about Alien.
Yep.
But it's the most extreme example I can think of. Now, yes, some films don't hold up the way you'd like them to. And some films look better in retrospect than they used to. But that's an ongoing process.
Yep.
That,
it is.
You know, you just can't re-examine everything every year to say, now what do I think now about that film?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair enough.
Thank you, sir.
Some things are good.
Thank you so much.
Some things are better.
At one time, I decided, and I even wrote about this, I think, at the foreword to that year's movie guide, that there's a point where you say to yourself, why don't I just give every Marx Brothers movie 4 stars? Why don't I just give every Hitchcock movie 4 stars? Because even the ones that aren't that good are still so good in compared to what I'm seeing lately that, you know, why quibble? Now, of course, you know, Hitchcock had his failures and his near failures, and the Marx Brothers had some films that were off the mark and not among their greatest work, but they're still the Marx Brothers, and they're still Hitchcock. So everything's relative. Is that a summation?
I think so.
All right, it's sort of a summation.
I think so. A gentleman named Rodney, I'm not sure if it's Bowcock, which classic films would you use as an introduction for young people?
Well, I would start with something like Singin' in the Rain.
Yep.
Singin' in the Rain is a film that I hate to say can't miss because, you know.
Because someone's going to come out and go, yeah, it can, but they're wrong.
But here's a film that is both a musical and a comedy. You know, films and shows too get called musical comedies that don't necessarily have an equal balance of those two components. This one does.
Yep.
It's a very funny movie, and it's an extraordinarily wonderful musical.
With three of the most likable, lovable leading actors.
Yep.
Who just, it just doesn't get better. Really does. It's Donald O'Connor and Gene Kelly and the one and the only Debbie Reynolds.
Yep.
And I think that my dad and I talk about this sometimes because I've asked him, what were you really excited to show me? You know, what were you really excited to show me? What were you worried I wouldn't like? What were you worried I would like? Was there anything that you went, oh, I wish she'd really get into this? And it is interesting because there are some things that are, I mean, relatively foolproof. And something like Singing in the Rain, where you've got these beautiful, smiley people doing these incredible numbers on all the colors and everything. I think that even a young person who may not have seen anything like it before would connect to it in some way.
And then what I found, I think we have discussed this before with relation to introducing you to movies when you were young,
yeah,
is that we could go from one movie to another based on, well, if you like this, mm-hmm. you might also like this. You go to another Gene Kelly movie. You go to another MGM musical. Or you try something a little different and say, well, here's Fred Astaire. He's a great dancer, too. Or whatever it may be.
And thankfully now, there are a lot of DVD collections, and we have most of them, mm-hmm. that just have excerpts and numbers. So if you're worried about showing someone a full film, if you're worried
especially
that...
Especially for a young person.
If that may be too much, but even, frankly, not even just young.
Yeah.
Some people who just don't know what it is and are sort of
yeah.
immediately put off just at the concept.
Mm-hmm.
If you get, if you show them a little something, show them a Busby Berkeley number.
Or show them That's Entertainment.
Yep.
Or That's Entertainment Part 2.
Yep.
Which are the best of the best. Then, of course, it's not just music and comedy. If you're trying to get somebody hooked, you can show them something like Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Which is just a wonderful movie. And if you've shown them Young Frankenstein, if they've seen that, and then you show them the origin or the source material that Mel Brooks was parodying, Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder were parodying, that's a lot of fun. And then you can go into the classic horror films. Frankenstein and Dracula take, I think, a little more sophistication to appreciate because they're so early in the talkie era. Yeah. There's no music in them.
They're a bit slower paced.
Yes, but they're great movies. But Bride of Frankenstein is fantastic. And The Wolfman is also a really great movie. And then there's Abbott and Costello.
I was about to say, Abbott and Costello have to come in somewhere.
Well, they do here.
Yeah.
Because you have the real Dracula, Bela Lugosi, and the real Wolfman, Lon Chaney Jr., and Glenn Strange, who had already played the Frankenstein monster before. And they take the horror part of it seriously. The monsters are not making fun of those characters they created. They're serious. They're still supposed to be horror icons, and they are. And then Abbott and Costello play their comedy against it. Just wonderful. And we saw an Abbott and Costello reference just last week.
Yep.
Just last week in The Nice Guys with Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
I thought my mother was going to fall out of the chair. I genuinely thought that Mama was going to just go right out of her seat.
And we're not going to tell you what it is because that would spoil it.
It was just...
But there is an homage to Abbott and Costello, Lou Costello in particular.
In particular.
Right. In The Nice Guys. Look for it.
Hey, Abbott.
It's not that, but it's yes.
I got all excited. Let's see. Christopher James says, favorite book to movie adaptations?
Oh, well, I will tell you, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, I don't and won't read a current book that I know is being made into a movie. I just won't. Because on the one, for several reasons. One is the book is always better than the movie.
Yep.
So why set myself up for discouragement and disappointment? The other reason is that I don't feel it's fair because when you buy your ticket to see a movie, you don't have to pass an entrance exam that you've read the book.
Yeah.
So if I haven't read the book, I'm an average moviegoer. I'm the avatar of an average moviegoer, just going in and seeing the movie and judging it on its own terms.
And sometimes you'll read them afterwards.
Yes. Now,
When
I was a kid, I did that a lot. It was movies. It was seeing David Copperfield that made me read Charles Dickens for the first time. It was seeing Lost Horizon, that wonderful Frank Capra film with Ronald Coleman, that made me go out and find a copy of James Hilton's book, which I loved equally well. So I'm often inspired by older movies in particular to seek out the books.
Yeah.
So that's a win-win. And speaking of win-win, we're going to take another win-win break, which everybody enjoys so much. And we will be right back. Welcome back to Maltin on Movies. I am Leonard Maltin.
And I am not. I'm Jesse Maltin.
But who are
you? I'm another Maltin. I'm the other Maltin.
That's true.
The other Maltin.
All right, a couple more movie recommendations, and then we'll go back to your questions. Films that are playing currently. Another one is Dipan, a film by Jacques Audiard, the French filmmaker who made A Prophet, one of the most harrowing films I've ever seen, plus Rust and Bone and The Beat My Heart Skipped. But this one is, like all of his others, very heavy duty. This is not light entertainment fare, but it's awfully, awfully good. It's about a man who is desperate to get away from the unceasing wars, civil wars, and corruption in Sri Lanka. So he takes with him a woman who herself is trying to get out and has kind of taken a girl who was orphaned with her and tells the girl to pretend to be her daughter. And then he pretends that they are his wife and daughter because a family can get out.
Mm.
So they are a pretend family. And as a pretend family, they manage to go to France illegally. And, you know, they're accepted there and they're even given an opportunity for work. He gets work as a caretaker at a housing project. And he's a capable guy and he can do that. And the girl goes to school and has some awkward transition time there because she's new and she's foreign. None of them speak French. They have to grudgingly and awkwardly try to get familiar with the language. They're outsiders. But they start to blend in a little bit at a time, just a little. And he is told, mind your own business. Don't look around at what's happening here in this housing project. Just do your job. He's a custodian, essentially. You know, fixes lights that are broken and all that, toilets that are overflowing. But the business that's going around all around him is drugs. And he can't keep out of it. He just can't keep out of it. And that's all I'm going to say. It's about the gradual involvement and engagement of these people in their environment, their new environment. And it's about war and about a guy who's trying to escape from war and finds a different kind of war on this new turf that he's come to. It's very compelling. Very well done. Actors you won't recognize, unknowns. I'm not sure if all of them are professional actors even. I don't think the lead man is. But, gee, it gets you. It hits you in the gut. Dipan, Dheepan. If you like good foreign language films, that's as good as you're going to find. And then on a much lighter note, there's a film called Doe, D-O-U-G-H, Doe, from England, starring the great Jonathan Pryce and a newcomer, Jerome Holder, and the wonderful Pauline Collins. And this is about a kosher baker in a neighborhood that's changing and a society that's changing who's trying to stick to his old ways and please his old customers. But things are, you know, not the same. Customer base is shrinking. Aren't as many people interested in kosher, goods on Friday and Saturday for the Sabbath. And he needs a new apprentice. And the new apprentice he takes on, because he has no choice, is a young Muslim man, an emigre. And at first he doesn't know how this is going to work out, and then it works out surprisingly well for comedic reasons. It's a lighthearted film. It deals with some serious issues. There's serious undercurrents in the film, but they deal with it with a light touch. So when you're done, you're smiling. You're not feeling like you've been beaten up or dragged through a social film with heavy issues thrown in your face. They're there, but they're handled, I think, in a very deft and clever way. And Jonathan Pryce is just so damn good. What a wonderful actor he is. And the young man named Jerome Holder, he's new to me, but he's very, very good. So if you want a sort of a feel-good movie, I would recommend Doe. So that's still playing in theaters, too.
Yep.
Back to our questions.
Back to the questions. Let us see. Karen Kalitzi Noonan says, can you discuss the many film festivals that you attend in the course of a year? Which one of the quiet or regional ones do you think are worthy of a road trip? And she also says, and looking forward to seeing you at the Castro later this month.
She's referring to the San Francisco Silent Film Festival, which occurs at the very beginning of June, and which my wife and I are very much looking forward to. They do a wonderful job there. And their headquarters is the Castro Theater, the historic
Castro Theater. Which is a beautiful old theater.
And they have a great program lined up, as always. So there's one that I look that we both look forward to, my wife and I. And we said yes last fall to two festivals we'd never attended before. And we enjoyed them both. We went to the Savannah Film Festival last fall. And we said yes in part because we'd never been to Savannah and always wanted to go there. What a lovely festival. What a beautiful and, of course, historic city to visit. We got a heaping dose of Southern hospitality and Southern cooking. I think I did gain weight that week that I was
there. The worst phone calls ever. The cruelest phone calls. Oh, we just had this chicken. Oh, we just... Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate it.
Awfully nice. And it's run by SCAD, which is the Savannah College of Art and Design, a major arts school in this country. And they do wonderful work. They've renovated a 1940s movie palace on the main street of town, and that's their home base. But there's another theater just around the corner, which is a 1920s vaudeville theater, also equipped for movies now. So they have everything there, plus a great ice cream parlor.
Most importantly.
Right next door to the theater.
Most importantly.
I was on the jury for that one. I saw 10 feature films and then a couple of extracurricular ones. Interesting films and interesting short subjects, too. A good turnout from the public and friendly people. So we had a lovely time there. And then 2 weeks later, we went to the Virginia Film Festival in Charlottesville, Virginia, and had a great time there. Again, friendly people, very welcoming. They have a movie palace, a Paramount movie palace they have restored beautifully, and other screening venues on the campus designed by Thomas Jefferson, University of Virginia.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy, that
and,
Thomas Jefferson.
So those were two new experiences that we very much enjoyed. And at Charlottesville, they asked me to present a couple of filmmakers I admired, and I was able to get the wonderful animator Bill Plimpton to come. And Maggie Greenwald, whose work I admire so much, brought a 35mm print of her film Songcatcher.
Which we love.
Our family were big fans of that film, and it played great. It was just as good as it was the first time I saw it. So that was great. And we even screened some vintage films from the Library of Congress, whose headquarters are just up the road a piece in Culpeper, Virginia. So that was a win-win all the way.
And are there any other festivals?
Well, those are the first two that come to mind. Of course, Telluride is a great festival over Labor Day weekend. It's a tough festival to get into. It is a costly festival to attend, we must say. And I say this in honor of journalism's credo of full disclosure. We are guests of the festival, and we're very privileged to be guests of the festival because I participate.
Do you think other journalists got that memo?
And so we're very happy to be spoiled by the nice folks at Telluride.
We are. I grew up there from womb to now. I'm about to be 30, so a good while. And also Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara is a wonderful festival that takes place, of course, it's only a short ride from Los Angeles where we live. And that takes place during Oscar season. And because of that, Roger Durling, the executive director, is able to persuade an awful lot of the Oscar hopefuls to come up and visit for tributes of various sorts. And I'm lucky enough to host an annual tribute to what they call their modern master. And now he's even named the award after me.
Yep. So last year, Michael Keaton got the very first Maltin Modern Master Award.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, it was some guy named Johnny Depp.
Yep.
Never heard of him.
And unlike some other festivals, which just sort of hand you an award for showing up, they actually do a tribute. And the Modern Master Award is an evening-long tribute with film clips and commentary. And we have a great time.
We do.
And we fill the Arlington Theater, which is a big theater.
Big theater. And Roger, who my dad mentioned runs everything, Roger is such a film lover. And the lineups are always really neat, really interesting. And you can't go wrong, you're in Santa Barbara.
That's right. Plus, I admire the fact that when we go to see a film, a documentary or an indie film or something we haven't heard of before, there's always a crowd.
Yep.
The people of Santa Barbara really support that festival and they're film lovers. And they show up for not just the celebrities, but for interesting films just because they know that's what they're going to get, something interesting. Maybe not always great, but interesting.
And a good audience is all you can really hope for.
That's right.
Now, this one, you laughed when I read this to you before, but Mike Livermore says, is the John Wayne movie Adventures End lost?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you know where you put it? Thoughts? Any idea where it went?
I don't know. I don't know. I wish I could answer that intelligently.
I'm sorry, Mike. we're lost about this.
Mm-hmm.
You like that? Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And lastly, John Temple says, which people's names on a movie in any capacity immediately give you high expectations? For me, knowing that John Williams scored a film means they aimed high.
Well, that's true, and that's a good measuring stick. John Williams is very choosy, very busy, but also very choosy about what he does. Gosh, you know, I admire writer-directors. I tend to really, really be drawn, whether it's, we're talking about past films of Billy Wilder or Preston Sturges or Joseph L. Mankiewicz or any number of others from the Golden Age, right up to today and people like Alexander Payne, who we mentioned just a short time ago. Yeah. These are people who I think have a real passion for storytelling. They've got something they want to say, like Tom McCarthy, another example.
Yes.
Who's both a writer and a director. And so those are the names that I look for most of all. And there's some actors who are choosy, too, who, you know, and, you know, look, if I see Jack Nicholson's name on a film, and we haven't seen it lately, you know, that's a film I'm going to want to see no matter what.
You say that, but you didn't come with me to watch the Adam Sandler film he's in.
That's true. Mea culpa. Mea culpa. What can I say? Every rule has an exception. And every actor has his weaker moments.
There you go. There you go. Sometimes we look at something and go, I think he was just doing this so he could make his dues.
There's too many to list. You know, I'm not being evasive. There's just too many names that have meaning to me, that have substance to me. I look at the screenwriter's credit on a film very early on to see if it somebody who's got a good track record.
Cinematographer.
Cinematographer is somebody I pay attention to. Yes, the composer too.
Yeah.
But the composer doesn't necessarily have a say in the making of the film. He or she can make or break the film with that music that they provide. But I tend to look at the screenwriter, the director, and of course the stars.
We get, you know, because my dad gets emails about different screenings that are happening, or letting him know if a premiere is coming up. Sometimes we look at them, and it's just, you'll see either a phenomenal cast or just an odd one where you go, why is so and so in this film with these other people? And sometimes it can be interesting. And to get at this particular time, because summer is upon us, my dad just keeps shaking his head, going, what are all these movies? Where do all these movies come from?
All right, I'm gonna end this because I see by the old clock on the wall, and there is no clock on the wall here. But I see by the old clock on the wall that I'm running out of time. Here's some final recommendations. If you haven't seen John Carney's Sing Street, I have to repeat that title because people don't get it the first time. It's called Sing, S-I-N-G, Sing Street.
Space.
This is from the
Sing
man,
Space Street. Sorry,
this is from the man who made Once, the Irish writer-director and composer, songwriter, who made Once and then made another lovely movie called Begin Again here in the States. This is his latest. It's set in Dublin in 1985. About
and his
a,
name?
A young person, pardon me?
And the director's name?
John Carney. John Carney, who made those wonderful films, now has made Sing Street. Charming, disarming, wonderful film.
You're over the moon about this movie.
I am, indeed.
It's playing in AMC as well, so it's not just... several of these movies are not just playing in art house theaters. They are actually playing in mainstream theaters. Sing Street is at quite a few of the AMCs.
And there's a little film that may not still be in theaters. It got a very small release, but it's definitely on video on demand. And it's called The Confirmation. And this addresses our last question. Why did I want to see this movie? Because it was written and directed by Bob Nelson, the man who wrote Nebraska for Alexander Payne. And I know some of his earlier work from television. I said, if this guy made the film, I want to see it. Plus, it has a great cast. Clive Owen, Jaden Lieberher, the boy who's in Midnight Express and is so good in it. Robert Forster, Maria Bello, Patton Oswalt, Tim Blake Nelson, Matthew Modine. That's a strong lineup. But mainly it was Bob Nelson. I said, this guy is a guy I want to pay attention to. I want to see what he's doing. It's a lovely little film. It's a lovely little film about a father and son and a kind of a broken relationship that they're trying to repair. And it's a small movie. It's a modest movie. But by the time it's over, you're smiling. Smiling with satisfaction. You haven't wasted your time. You've seen a little gem, The Confirmation. I know that it's available on iTunes and on Amazon Video and other sources online, and it's well worth seeking out. That's my final word on that subject. And that brings us to a close for today's episode.
Two Maltins out.
If I dropped this mic, by the way, that would make a lot of noise and might even injure the mic.
You're also too polite.
Yeah, I can't.
You wouldn't want to hurt somebody's microphone.
I can't drop the mic. But I can tell you that you can read me at leonardmaltin.com.
You can follow him on Twitter at Leonard Maltin.
We can do all of those things.
And you can even see him on Facebook.
By golly.
Yep. You're everywhere. You're blowing up. You're blowing up, Maltin.
Although I asked you this the other day because I was listening to some talk show.
Yeah.
am I crushing it or am I killing it?
And,
which am I doing?
And I said, I think both. I vote both.
That's a high compliment.
You are both crushing and killing.
Wow.
That's right.
Well, I can't top that. All I can do is say goodbye for now and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.